You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 547 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Mr. Fosma Moon. Good morning, good afternoon.
Good evening and good night.
We're in Joburg. We are in Joburg. I first and foremost, I'd like to commend you for making your flights.
I got on the airplane.
Yeah.
And it joined you. Yeah. I regret it.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. You really went for the glutton of pain of three back-to-back red eyes.
Yeah. I didn't think about this at the time.
Three back-to-back red eyes, with one being like very, I think the one we're taking tonight is like the oddest of all of them, because it leaves relatively early Joburg time and gets in very late.
Like, not very late, like mid-afternoon.
2:45, that's not late.
It's not late, but it's like, it's a weird time. It's not like a red eye. It's a red eye that's like, I don't even know how to describe it.
I mean, it's kind of like a U.S. to Europe red eye that leaves super late, I guess, but it's not leaving late, and then you get in really,
I don't know, it's weird. It's 11 hours. 12.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's a 12-hour, I thought it was 11.
12.
So we're doing Joburg sipping tonight on Qantas.
On the 380.
On 380. I mean, it's cool. I'm glad we're doing it.
It'll be a cool line.
It'll be a cool line. Maybe we'll see Antarctica.
Yep. Last night I flew Frankfurt to Joburg, and I got to experience something cool on that flight, which was the moon was, as the sun was coming up, the moon set across the horizon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which was kind of bizarre to me. Like I was looking west. And I just kind of watched the moon go below the horizon, which was, I had never seen it before. So it's kind of cool.
Because of 339.
339. I don't like it. I mean, it's fine. We'll
talk about Condor,
but it's noise. It's a louder airplane for sure.
Compared to
like the 350 or even the
787s. Well, I mean, it's a 30-year-old design with new engines.
New engines and some wingtips.
Yeah. It would cost a lot to update the insulation. That's money.
So I guess you should tell me why we got here. So you took the Newark. Nonstop.
I took the Newark nonstop.
And you, I don't know if you said you wanted to talk about United, so let it rip.
What a disaster. Oh, so I learned something interesting. So we had, I think the flight leaves at like 8:40. It's scheduled to leave at 8:40. Boarding starts at 7:50. At 7:50, I get to the gate, and they announced that they were going to be delayed because they have to clean the plane. Now, mind you, the plane got in at 5:30 in the morning that day. So it's been there for 15 hours. And coincidentally, right around this time is when their weight and balance system went offline, so everything went sideways.
United had an outage.
Yeah. And so I was texting with one of our friends who works for United, and I said, why can you guys not just get this plane cleaned when it's been here for 15 hours?
Because if it had been on time, would you have missed the weight and balance issues? Or would you have been like on the cusp?
We might have been able to get out, depending on how quickly they loaded the plane.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it was an added delay, right? Like Cape Town left 45 minutes, an hour before us. The two were supposed to leave around the same time, but they were ready to go because they had a plane that was clean. But what was interesting to me was that what was shared with me is that for airlines can figure out, going back to last week's episode of hard standing, airlines can figure out how to hard stand an entire from a passenger experience, but apparently airlines can't figure out how to clean the plane when it's hard standard.
Oh yeah. So the plane had been parked out there. They didn't go out and clean it.
Yeah.
So they didn't park their gate.
Yes. That's why we got delayed. And it's like, this is a relatively easy problem to solve.
Yeah. It's called bus.
Yeah.
Airstair.
Well, they're already on vans most of the time.
Yeah. Depends on the airport.
Yeah. Yeah. So how about the airlines figure out how to hard stand and empty planes first to clean them before they figure out the passenger stuff?
I mean, it's infuriating because you know the plane has been sitting there for that long. It probably didn't get towed over till
an hour and a half before the flight day. Not even. It got towed. We had a last minute gate change. It got towed at boarding time.
It's like they remembered that they had a flight
for
that one.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we should. Oh.
We have a flight leaving. We're missing something. What are we missing?
Let me eat. 2 inches. 2 wings. Oh. Call the pilots.
But we made it to Joburg. No diversions this time.
That's good.
Yeah.
You said you had some experiences with passengers that were interesting?
Oh my God.
Don't lose your phone in the seat. Is that what you're saying?
So there was a family of five. parents and three daughters. The one sitting behind me apparently kept losing stuff in her seat. Lost her glasses, apparently, lost her phone. So about as we're descending into arrival, they're starting to scramble to look for the phone. They can't find it. Half the flight attendants came by, tore the seat apart. They couldn't find it. Halfway through this conversation, I hear the girl say, well, I'm not sure if it was in the seat or if I left it in the bathroom.
These are teenagers?
Yes.
Oh, well. Well, I want to know. So this flight is full. Like when because I had originally booked this flight, but I was going to go to Newark, Gilbert with you. It was very full. Was it all like people going on tours? Was it a giant tour group? Because when we booked, it was nuts.
I know. It didn't look like a giant tour group, but there were a bunch of people going hunting, but they looked like a couple of them were chatting, but they weren't in the same group. There was definitely a bunch of families boarding. Like, I was ready to kill people pre-boarding because we had – I don't understand why the airlines can't enforce the pre-boarding rules. So we had a gaggle of 12 people of one group. Not a single one of them was handicapped or under the age of two. The youngest was probably like the age of six, and they all decided they needed to get pre-boarded. But because we were delayed, they all decided just lie down and sprawl all over the gate area.
What's wrong with people?
I don't know. They needed to get group pictures. They're blocking the. I'm like, come on, people, let's go.
It's also it's winter down here, which my flight was like mid. I'd say it was somewhat full. It wasn't full, but it was. It was decent in coach, especially. It was a decent boat. But it's interesting because it seems like there's still a lot of people traveling to Gilbert. It's not like winter is like a down season.
It's not exactly cold for it being winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the 30s. It was in the 30s this morning.
You know, but like that was before the sun really came up. And yeah, it'll peak in the 60s today.
Yeah, that's nice.
Right. Yeah.
I guess people escape summer. I was going to say a few things happened to me. So I took Alaska to LA, and then I took Condor LA to Frankfurt, and then I took Condor Frankfurt to Jober.
How was Condor?
It was fine. Like I say that a lot. It was okay. It was not amazing. It was not bad. It's okay. Like it's for the price, like for what they offered. If you found a decent business class fare in it, why not?
So you took the mileage ticket.
I did the mileage ticket.
Were you glad you did the mileage ticket and not the revenue ticket or vice versa?
I put it on the revenue ticket. It would have just fine. Like with 8 hours. Heck, operationally, I think they are a bit of a mess. Like they do some weird stuff. So they use, first of all, let's talk about Alaska. Alaska to LA was delayed. So I'm just like watching this. And then they needed to get a wheelchair passenger on. It was a wheelchair passenger with a motorized wheelchair. And they were fully handicapped. So could not move and needed assistance to get on the plane.
Mainline or 175?
It was a mainline plane. But I heard one of the mechanics, one of the guys that was helping load the wheelchair, tell a pilot, he was like, yeah, he's like, we can bend it backwards. He's like, but if it doesn't get under 36 inches or some number, he couldn't fit it on me, the plane. If it's taken apart. I'm like, wow. But they helped this guy. I mean, so credit to them. They got on the plane and they helped him. I would have loved to have seen the result, like what that looks like. Getting him off the plane. But then the same thing happened at Frankfurt, from Frankfurt to Joburg. There was another passenger with a motorized wheelchair. They actually loaded him because we were using air stairs. They loaded him using an elevator truck on door 2R, two right.
Okay.
So they actually like rolled it on and then they helped the passenger get in the seat and then they took the wheelchair down. So that was cool. It's interesting to me to see handicapped passengers getting helped and having to navigate things that are fairly difficult for non-handicapped passengers.
So you got the heart stand treatment at Frankfurt.
Double. Oh. That's the other thing I'll say with Condor, is it's like heart stand city to them, it feels like.
Which gates are expensive.
Well, and if you're going to heart stand people, why don't you just heart stand them to the same terminal where you know that they're going? Like, Condor uses a lot of B gates. I think they use some Z gates, but it's mostly B gates. They dropped us in Z, and most people's connections weren't B. Which, to go to B, you have to go through security. With Z, you don't. Like, if you're going to an international flight, out of Z, just go flight. So that was annoying. But they use the Air France lounge at LAX. Very nice lounge. Kind of a hidden gem. Has views of the April and the airport, the planes taken off. I think it's nicer than the One World lounge. The One World lounge is, like, overrun with people.
I haven't been to the One World lounge at LA.
Yeah, where the Planes lounge is at.
I can divide ship.
Speaking of which, okay, so let's talk about that too. So I took the tunnel at LAS. There's a new section of the tunnel open to connect the AA terminal to, I guess, terminal 4 to terminal 5. There's a new section of tunnel there. So it used to be you went up at the end, at the very end of T4, and you walked past the flagship lounge.
Yes.
Okay. You don't do that anymore.
No, there's another tunnel. It's not a new tunnel.
It's not new, but it's open now.
Yes.
Like you, it used to be like it just took you to baggage claim.
Yeah, they just opened the walkway to the back part of the tunnel.
Yeah. And so they've opened that. They closed the other tunnel. Like you can go up, but they knocked down the terminal there.
Yeah, the middle section of 4 is missing, if I remember correctly.
It's there's like 3 gates you can go to, and then if you want to go anywhere else, you got to go back down and then go to T4.
You didn't go through all this when we went to Nassau?
No, because it wasn't open. When we went to Nassau, I was, why would I have been on the T4?
I'm like trying to remember because I went over there for the, yeah, so I guess you didn't. So I went through all that when I went,
okay.
When it was
relatively new. Yeah. Actually, I think that's why the flagship dining is closed.
No, flagship dining was closed even before the.
I know, but if you look at like what they knocked down, I think if you walked into flagship dining, you might fall off and slip.
Maybe. I think they're just, flagship dining is just, there's not enough demand for it.
Yeah, and first is going.
Yeah.
They do LA, Miami, LA, Santa, LA, JFK.
And LA, Heathrow.
Heathrow.
With first, right? Wizards. Or Soho, doesn't
it? They don't do those from LA anymore.
Right.
I mean, they never did Buenos Aires. They did Sao Paulo, but that's been gone for a while.
Yeah. Anyway, I haven't been in that town yet. I thought it was nice. It feels like the walk is longer, but I guess you don't have to walk to the terminal, which reduces the number of people you kind of like.
There's a lot more lost people, though.
There are. I got lost. I'll be honest. I went up, like, because I'm so used to going up and walking through there that I'm like, wait, what? Where? And so I like asked the lady, I was like, do I go back down? She's like, yeah, just go back down. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's why. So I'm like trying to remember, how did I experience this? When we went to Nassau, I walked outside because I was coming from the Hyatt. So I just walked to T4, went into security at T4, just walked over to International. Yeah. So I didn't experience it until I had to get back to 6.
Yeah, so where am I going?
Yeah, then I'm like, I follow the signs. I'm like, I don't know where I'm going, but.
And they wasn't signed great. They need to fix some of the signs because it's when you're going to T4, it's not obvious that you need to take the right instead of going straight.
Mm.
So anyway, it's fine. But Kondo, LA to Frankfurt, it's fine. Good crew, decent food. I'll say the bed seems really narrow, like up by your shoulders. So when you lay down, it's very tight, especially on your back.
And they teased you with a menu, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they gave me a menu, and it was like dinner foods. And then for the before arrival, what's the arrival time? It's like 2 p.m. It was like a hearty. It was like a hearty food. It wasn't breakfast. It was like a lunch type things. I got excited, and then the right attendant comes around, and she goes, "Oh, that's not your venue." I was like, "Dang it!" I was like, "I was excited for this." But yeah, the mattress pad they put on doesn't do a lot. But I slept a solid probably 7 hours on that flight. Thinking about it, I probably shouldn't have, but it helped me on the next flight. But that's hard. It's hard to know.
It's all you're going to be delirious by the time we get to Sydney.
I'm already delirious.
Well,
but good crew. And then Frankfurt, so we got a bus gate. And they took us to terminal and I went to the Z business class lounge for Lufthansa. That is a sad lounge. Like just like 3 things of food. Showers are nice, but it's like, it's not really much there. I know Senator is much nicer. This is kind of a sad lounge.
And Z's should be the newest of them, right?
Z's the nice one. Z's like upstairs and has like nice views and stuff. But it was just so kind of like, meh. And then I went to the other one in B, which was closer to my gate. That was a complete waste of time. It was packed and not good. So would not do that again. And then Frankfurt to Joburg, good flying, terrible crew. Just terrible crew. Didn't care. They had asked me at the beginning of the flight, they said, would you rather us speak English or German? I was like, English, my German's like, I'm good enough to get myself in trouble. So, English. They spoke to me the entire flight, German. So I'm just like, okay, I guess we're speaking German. But it was fine. I mean, it's fine. I got the prime seat for Frankfurt to Joburg. A lot more space
okay. On
that seat. Was it worth the cost?
What was the cost?
200 euro.
Okay.
Not insignificant.
Not insignificant. Not amazing. What was great was I was on the plane with my boarding pass
And the flight attendants come up and they're like, are you supposed to be in that seat? And I said, yeah. And they're like, did you pay for it? I was like, yeah. And they're like, we need to see your boarding pass. I was like, okay. They're like, oh, it is day two, 202. I'm like, yeah, it was lying to you. Like,
does your PDA not tell you?
Yeah. And so I guess they had one extra passenger maybe who bought up later. And so they were confused because their manifest only showed one in a problem seat. So it was fine. It got in a little late. We were delayed out of Frankfurt, got in late. Yeah.
Right, two restrooms for probably 30 business class passengers.
So
it's like you're united on the 79s.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of become like the norm, I think.
I don't know how that works, but
the lab is constantly being used.
And I didn't realize, I must not be paying enough attention, but in the 789s, there's no restroom on the left side in business.
No, the one up front isn't on the left?
No, it's on the right. Unless there's one in front of the galley?
There's one by the pilot's door.
Then there might be one up there, but two in the cabins are both on the right side.
Oh, I wonder, because I thought there was three labs on the 789s.
Okay,
maybe I'm wrong.
You could be right. I didn't go all the way up there because I was in the mid cabin.
Yeah. But yeah, you're out there on the right. And then the party lab is on the right side in the front, correct?
There's no party lab in business.
Oh, not anymore? Not
bad. Yeah.
You know, I guess a good lab door.
I know. Stretch out, you know, take a nap.
Yeah.
More room in your seat.
What was I going to ask you? You guys got in like 2 hours late because of your delay.
Yeah, over 2 hours late.
Did the return flight, did it leave anywhere close to on time?
It left an hour and 10 minutes late, I think.
Impressive that they made it up.
Yeah. I was, especially since when we got in, the mechanics had to come on board to tear that seat apart behind me.
And the boat goes, I think it left at the Vassar. And the mechanic's like, what the? You straight?
Oh, no, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Frankfurt's sad. Frankfurt's sad airport. I like Frankfurt for like connections and stuff. But spending 8 hours in Frankfurt made me realize is a sad airport.
I couldn't tell you the last time I was in Frankfurt.
It's been a long time for me. I mean, this is before COVID.
Did you leave the hotel or the airport at all?
No, I thought about it, but we got in because we got in late. And then I needed to get some personal stuff I needed to get done in my review. So I just was like, let's Potsdam, the lounge. So I walked around the airport quite a bit and then hung out the lounge for a while. It was funny, the lounge attendant was like, the lounge in B is very, very nice. That man was full rep.
If you had the time, you should have gone back to Z and said, you lie.
You lie. You sit on the throat lies. So yeah, we're going to do the Sydney flight. And then I'm on, how are you getting the husband from Sydney?
Oh,
at the important one.
Well,
I guess we're going to find out when we get to Sydney what we're doing, right?
Well, yeah. Someone twisted my arm and convinced me I needed to take the Emirates flight in first from Sydney to Christchurch.
How long was that? 3 hours?
3.5 hours. But it's on the 380, so I get my shower.
You gonna do it?
Absolutely.
Have you ever done Emirates?
Nope.
That's awesome. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to Christchurch. I'll spend the night in Christchurch Monday night. And then Tuesday at 6 a.m. I fly to Melbourne, to fly to San Francisco, to fly to Toronto, to fly home.
That's painful.
Oh, yeah, especially now that Air Canada FAs might be striking early next week. It'll be fun.
See, all this seemed like a great idea.
It always seems like a great idea at the time.
But to be fair to those, and we were both looking up, couldn't we get go home, show her to the X?
I'm not tired. I'm tired for sure. But I'm not
doing anything.
If you keep moving, it's not so bad, but it's like I got up this morning, I went down to the restaurant, I had breakfast, I did some work, I was fine. I had another friend in town, he was staying at the Park Hyatt, so he showed up, we talked for a while, I was fine. We took a walk, we were fine. We came back and I sat down, like, oh no.
Because it's like midnight in New York.
Yeah. So now, it's not even midnight, it's like 6 a.m. at this 4 years. But now, like, wait, we got it's another 6 hours that we gotta go?
I'm doing okay, though. I couldn't sleep on the flight down here. Like, I slept for maybe 2 hours, and I was just, like, wired for some reason.
We took off. I passed out, woke up 9.5 hours later.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I will say, like, doing this connection via Europe and knowing that this is the way that most people used to do flights to Johannesburg, I can see why the nonstops are so cool and why they're so popular.
Like, but then it makes you wonder, why did South African fail at during the...
Well, I mean, and textiles, right?
Eastbound they didn't. Westbound they did.
Yeah. I mean, these were, I don't know.
But even
they were doing it with 330s too.
They were doing the 346 for a long time.
346, that's that right there. Money loser.
Yeah. But you could probably charge up, like United charges a half day premium.
Yeah.
I think the market's flipped.
A lot more South Africans wanting to go to the US. A lot more South Africans
from the US coming down. But why wouldn't South Africans start it now?
Where are you going to get a 346?
They can get a newer plane.
With what money?
You could take a lease.
Yeah, I just think, I don't think they're like capable of doing that. I think South Africans are a bit of hurt.
Yeah.
And they're happy to just serve on the onward connections from United.
Oh, and Perth and Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
Which I don't, like those two work, but I don't know why. They don't even go to Europe now, which is surprising.
Perth mine is mine.
Is that what it is? Yeah. That's pure lightning. Sao Paulo, I'm guessing, is somewhat related to that as well.
So that kind of makes sense to me. I mean, they still fly.
So does South Africa do anything to the U.S.?
Like, nope.
They don't even have the opera
flights. I mean, that's why United's picked those up, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, I just, I mean, think about this, though. Your flight took 15 and a half hours to be down here.
You land at night at 5:30, 5:45. It took me 27 to 30 hours to do the same trip.
So you cut it in half.
Yep. Substantial.
It would be nice if there was like a European daytime flight to Cape Town or Johannesburg. And you said there used to be one, right?
Virgin runs a daytime northbound, or at least they did a few months ago. So the Heathrow to Cape Town is overnight, but it turns around and goes back during the day. And last time it gets into Heathrow at like 11 p.m.
See, I think if they had a time with U.S. connections, like
to come down in, but I don't think that's the market. I think the market is connections. I'm surprised BA doesn't do it with like a morning departure out of Heathrow and an evening departure out of Heathrow, because they do two anyway and they leave an hour apart. I don't get that.
And the bull ones are eighth.
Not always,
but a lot outside in the winter. No yawning.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, like when I did it a few months ago, it was or last year, it was a 380. The early flight was a 380 and the late flight was a 789.
Gotcha. Yeah. Didn't we do this trip when we had the diversion? Was that last winter?
That was in September, I think.
Okay.
I did BA last year at some point.
I was just trying to remember the weather. This was like snowing in dirt.
Yeah. And it was like September.
Problems.
Yeah. It was the end of their winter.
Yeah. Let's talk about Seoul and Portland.
So the rumor is, we've talked about it before, the rumor is that the Port of Portland is pursuing Korean and trying to get them to fly to Seoul.
And it's now pretty much confirmed that it's going to happen in 2026.
Is there that much of a market for it?
I don't know. I don't know why the market would be better for Korea over Japan, which historically you've always had a pretty big demand for Japanese travel.
You just don't have a Japanese flight anymore, do you?
No.
I didn't realize that's just gone.
JAL, I don't think, wants to do it because they need a plane to do it. I guess they do it the 788. But I don't know that there's like enough business demand to make that one make sense.
There was talk about Zip Air potentially coming, but it's never materialized.
So Koreans is confusing. I mean, I guess the onward connections out of Korean are good.
It opens up more of Asia than something like Zip Air.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I was hoping JAL would be there, but who else from Asia would come to Portland? It's a relatively small market.
And like,
I don't know if they would.
I mean, and it did San Jose for so long.
Yeah, true.
Right. Again, 788.
Yeah.
You can make it work.
Yeah. I think, I mean, even ANA struggled at Vancouver, though.
Is there a JV between AC and ANA?
There might be. We may need, this is where Seth would be helpful.
Yeah.
He didn't come to Joker.
No. He probably thinks we're insane anyways for doing this.
He knows what I'm saying.
But he's doing the JetBlue 25 for 25, so.
Joke's on. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And then Air Canada had some changes.
Aeroplan is going fully revenue-based now.
So what's the details? You have to spend a lot?
You do have to spend a lot. It's in the regular cheap. I don't think BE earns anything. They're basic economy or whatever, but they're the bulk of their economy fares are 2x,
okay.
2 points per dollar spent. The flex fares, so coach and business, is Coach, Flex, and I think all of business is 4X. And if memory serves me correct, you need 125,000 points for Super Elite.
So it's 4 points per dollar in business class?
Yeah. Or even Coach, Flex.
You'd think they would get a little bit more than into business. And get on the same level? Like even one more point would be.
But like if you're spending $2,000 on a business class fare versus like you, the more expensive fares, you're already going to earn a lot more.
Just because the dollar amount's higher.
Yeah. The really interesting thing is they're capping the number of points you can earn from partner flights.
What was it?
For non-014 ticket stock. So 014 is the Air Canada, is an Air Canada issue ticket. It's 25,000 points you can earn. So you can earn no more than 20% of what you would need for Super Elite.
That's a hit for people who rely on partners.
Right. But what that tells me is that Air Canada has, Aeroplan has too many people who are earning outside of Air Canada.
Or they've just learned from like United and said, we don't want, because United allows you to earn.
Right.
Unlimited amount.
Right. But it's so, wait, come on. Do we really think United knows what they're doing? They just copy everybody else.
So this is coming to United is what you're saying?
No, maybe. I don't think United's smart enough to do the right things. Right. United has lost the farm on what loyalty actually means.
I mean, oh, yeah.
I don't think Aeroplan has. I think, like, look, they are incentivizing the people who fly them. That's probably the right decision from a loyalty perspective.
Yeah.
To be blunt, right? They're not saying all credit card spend is the same. Yeah. You definitely can get, but you can now earn up to elite 35K through the credit card spend. Yeah. 25K has come down to whereas it's 50K today. This is the US Chase card. It's 50K today. With the changes, if you spend 25K, you will get $25,000 on the Chase card, you'll get elite 25K. So there's some gives and there's some takebacks. The changes were inevitable, I think.
Were there any changes like to redeemable miles, or does that stay the same?
I haven't studied enough to understand, to be honest. But I mean, to be fair, Aeroplan has been revenue based for a little bit of time, right? There's a dollar component they have in today's program. They're just removing the mileage requirement.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think Alaska's next?
I think Alaska has to do something, but at the same time, what was it, 2 years ago, right? Their head of loyalty said they don't see themselves going revenue-based.
But then there was like a conversation last year where he said we'd love to be revenue-based.
Love to be revenue-based versus we can't do revenue-based are two different things. I have lots of goals.
Yeah.
And wishes. That doesn't mean they're all going to happen.
Well, the way they price Narita fares at Sierra, you could go revenue base and make it in a couple of flights.
But Alaska has to be honest, I think Alaska needs to figure out what they want to be when they grow up before they can go revenue based.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
They're going to push a lot of people away if they go revenue based too quickly and don't have the right bones behind it, right? Because, if you don't live on the West Coast, like, how do you incentivize people outside the West Coast to fly you then?
Yeah. Or well, if, like, you're Delta.
Who's at Seattle just as strong of a hub in Seattle now.
I would jump on the opportunity if they went revenue-based.
Do you think Delta's as strong a hub as Alaska and Seattle?
The number of flights out of Seattle now that they have is nuts.
I feel like it's probably half the number of routes that Alaska flies.
Maybe routes, but the stuff that Delta flies, they do mainline. They may have E75s, but it's mostly mainline. They have a lot of flights.
Well, I believe that. I mean, it's like the loss leader of Seattle.
Yeah.
But I think here's my point. I think you introduce revenue base at Alaska and people are like, okay, so now what's to keep me from going to Delta? As long as they fly the route that I need to fly.
You have to fly Delta then?
Hey, you have friends that do it.
We do, but like Alaska has a very weird loyal following.
Yeah. Also, they announced they're going to change the livery. Did you see this?
Yes. Let's talk about two routes. So they said Seattle and Heathrow, and then Seattle to Reykjavik.
On a 737 MAX, which
Icelandair does today.
I know.
It's 7.5 hours. It's a long flight. Sorry to be on, but yeah, it's a long flight.
I don't want to spend 7.5 hours on the 737.
No, especially that's Recaro. So, oh my God. And then Seattle, London, Heathrow. So we're still trying to figure out where they're getting the slot from.
Well, they said through the partnership of AA and BA, So I suspect they're getting, BA's giving them a slot for the summer. I don't think the Alaska flights can be year round. And we'll see, because AA, right, what was it? AA was flying Seattle, Heathrow until 23. They dropped that. BA has two or three flights right now.
Two.
In that time, they've had three, if I remember correctly. So it could just be BA saying, we don't have another aircraft to throw on this, but we'll loan you a slot pair to run a third Seattle Heathrow flight.
Yeah. Makes sense. They changed Liberia.
Yes, inspired by the Northern Lights.
It looks nice. It looks fine. It's very, I don't know how to describe it. There's an airline that I like saw. I was like, it reminds me of that. And now I don't, I've lost it. It almost looks like Norse a little bit, like part of Norse's like design, but it's maybe it's just the cheap line and the way Big Bird will win.
Yeah, I didn't really see that, but I didn't really study it enough. Now you've got me thinking of who else it could look like.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of green and blue liveries that you see out there.
No, I think the color was, but it's like very plain. It's like white and then the blue and green, the tail.
It's Alaska.
It's, yeah.
What did you expect?
Yeah. I expected wool.
Those things have to go.
They're getting there. They're getting there.
I feel like they're still taking deliveries of planes with those on them.
We have to install the carpet on the wall. Yep.
That's not what wall-to-wall carpet means.
Anything else you want to chat about?
Nah, I think that's pretty good.
Because we're not going to do a bonus show on this. We'll do the bonus when we get to Sydney. See, well, if we get to Sydney.
Are you questioning if we're going to get to Sydney? That does not bode well.
I'm thinking about it. So, let's see.
Well, let's see if Joe Berg Newark opens up.
All right.
We'll talk to you when you just take care.
So, Foz, we are now back in...
Back?
Well, we made it to Sydney from Joburg.
Very wet Sydney.
It's rained pretty much the entire time.
Yes.
We took the Johannesburg to Sydney flight.
And I feel chipped.
Why?
We didn't take up the polar route.
No, we went really far north because of winds. The pilot even came on and said we were going to go pretty far north.
We basically went in a straight line.
Yeah.
We went to Perth.
It went, yeah, just south of Perth and kind of hugged the coast. And then we got to Melbourne, kind of.
Cut north the south of Adelaide, north of Melbourne, we cut into the continent.
I mean, yeah. So it was a good flight. I mean, let's start at Joburg.
What a disaster.
That was a cluster.
Yeah. And I knew this about Joburg. One of the things I don't like about Joburg is there is absolutely no premium security. There's one security line for everybody.
Yeah.
Or two.
There's two checkpoints.
Yes.
They all feed, it goes security straight into immigration.
Because we were in the international terminal.
Yes. And then. What we noticed was they stopped all security because immigration was so backed up.
Yes.
And so people were late and then trying to get through the line. So it was pretty chaotic.
And of course, you know, in the peak rush, because this is when all the European flights are getting into the airport.
Yeah.
The U.S. flights leave much later. So this is during peak rush for European and obviously the Sydney flight. There's a shift change.
Yeah. They like changed half the immigration agents. In the middle of...
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. When I came into Joburg from Frankfurt, the immigration situation was pretty bad as well. So we came in behind the Lufthansa 748 and the Air France 777. And it was... I think I told you it took me almost an hour. It took an hour and 10 to get through immigration.
Which is funny because we got in behind the Delta flight. And from the moment the door opened to the moment that I was at the hotel was 1 hour.
Yeah. And it took me probably 2.5 hours to get to the hotel.
It's crazy.
Which, I mean, to be fair, an hour to get through immigration as a standard, like, as just like a normal person, it's kind of, I mean, for people that come to the U.S., it's kind of the way it is.
I guess.
So.
I'm just spoiled.
Yeah, I mean, it is. We are spoiled. It was funny, though. They, like, some people they were spending a lot of time on going through immigration. Me, they, like, looked at my passport for, like, 3 seconds, just stamped me in.
Yeah, that was about the same for me.
So. And then didn't even give me a second look leaving. So let's talk about Qantas A380. I was surprised at how they ran that, like the whole boarding and security thing. So there was secondary security at the gate.
Yeah, but that's what they do for the U.S. flights.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do that for the Europe flights.
Mm. They were checking for liquids.
Yes.
That seemed like the main thing.
God forbid you have that contraband bottle of water.
And there were people who literally bought a bottle of water and were losing it. Which, by the way, on the flight.
There was no water.
no one, like, they never came by and asked if I wanted more water.
No, I think it was interesting. I was very disappointed by the flight overall.
Really?
Yeah. I was disappointed by the fact that they refused to hold your meal for later.
Yep.
Right. And that's pretty standard, at least with the Western carriers. Like, you ate at that point or you didn't eat at all?
Yeah. And then the snack options were fairly slim.
Yes.
And it was a 12-hour flight?
It's a 12-hour flight. They didn't really keep the lounge area stocked, as we saw.
Yep.
And there was no, they never came by with water service, but they also never came, like, I asked them for another bottle of water. Like, oh, yeah, we're all out. So, like, you got one bottle of water in business.
And would they only refill you, like, with a cup?
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I don't mind a glass of water, but sometimes I'm just thirsty and need a lot of water.
Yeah. Well, like, especially on a flight, you'll get dehydrated. So, I've had many flights where I'll wake up in the middle of sleeping just to drink a little water. And, like, on United, there'll be a glass and they'll just keep refilling it.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case here.
I was surprised by the lack of size of labs. So there's no big lab at all. They're all very small labs.
I can't say because I didn't really walk around. I just used the two labs on near us.
And they were both small.
Yeah, but we were in the mini cabin, right?
True.
So who knows what's behind us?
A giant business class cabin?
Yeah. But who knows what's behind that from a bathroom perspective?
It was not full.
That's the other thing that was surprising. Even though there were plenty of seats, Qantas did not release them.
Yep.
Like, Qantas is going to the old school of revenue management where we will never release seats near departure time because God forbid someone use miles instead of paying us.
And we were told there were first class seats available.
There's four seats available. They also refused to sell any upgrades.
Or even open those seats up.
Yep.
So, it was super interesting to me. I got on the plane, flight leaves at 6:45. And I got on the plane, fell asleep during takeoff, and then was going to ask them to hold my meal. I asked her if she could, and she was like, no, from a food safety perspective, they can't do it, which I don't understand.
They have refrigerators on the plane.
And the meat, why, if you don't put the meal in, just don't put it in the oven.
No. I think that is not a food safety thing. I think that's their excuse.
Yeah. So I was disappointed in that. And then I slept pretty solidly for like 6.5 hours, but I was exhausted, so.
And no Wi-Fi.
Which, do we know if the A380s have Wi-Fi?
I believe they do, because I feel like when I was on it years ago.
So it's just broken?
Yeah. With no announcement or anything, which is like one of my pet peeves, that if you're not going to offer it, you should at least announce that ahead of time.
Yeah. I had the snack sandwich, pretty good. Again, not a very substantial amount of food. So I went like 7 hours without eating. And then the breakfast came by and it was okay. It's funny to me, like, we talk about transatlantics and getting breakfast, and then you talk about transpacifics that land in the afternoon, get breakfast. Qantas is following the same.
Well, look, the reason they all do breakfast is because breakfast is the cheapest meal to cater.
It's cheap and people are waking up from sleeping, so we're going to give them.
No, that's the excuse.
Well, yeah. But that's what they claim.
That's the excuse. The reality is it is by far 40% to 60% cheaper than any other meal.
Yeah.
Which is why the airlines do it.
So that was also a little disappointing.
And what they should do is give you an option of breakfast and other food, not just breakfast options.
Yeah. Like, even if it was congee, because you could like claim congee is not breakfast or is breakfast, whatever, however you view it. It would be a substantial meal because it would have meat in it or whatever. You could have it vegetarian if you wanted, served meat on the side. There are ways to make it work, and the airlines choose not to make it work. I like the bed on Qantas. I thought it was one of the better beds.
I do not have complaints about the bed. I have complaints about the pillow and the blanket.
The pillow was like a lump of something.
It was barely a pillow.
Yeah.
It was like an arm pillow.
It was weird.
And the blanket, like, what I don't understand about airlines is, like, do they only make blankets for short people? Because I'm not that tall, and I don't fit under the blanket.
Yeah, my feet stuck out from the blanket. They get pajamas on the flight.
They did get pajamas.
Did you keep yours?
Of course.
We'll talk about collecting things and the bonus topics. That's our bonus topic. So don't talk about that. And we're staying at the Marriott Sydney Harbor.
Should have stayed at the Hyatt.
I would agree with that. This hotel reminds me of like some of the hotels in the United States that just haven't been renovated since like the mid 80s.
It's not true. This has clearly been renovated because they have flat panel TVs.
Okay.
They just did not do a good job during the renovation.
Yeah. It's pretty sad. Like, I'm looking, we're in Faza's room, and like, there's just like this empty space, like over here. It's just weird.
Well, the worst is the bathroom. Like, the shower you can't even turn around in, but there's all this dead space in the middle of the bathroom.
Yeah. It's a weird hotel. And like, things are just beat up. Yeah. Not a great experience.
Should have stayed at the Hyatt.
Yeah. I mean, I have a decent view. I'm able to see the Harbor Bridge.
I see buildings.
Yeah. It's a city view, Fuzz.
Right. I see the city.
Yeah. Are you on Australian time now?
I have no idea what time I'm on. I mean, I woke up at 8 a.m.
I mean, you're probably more adjusted than me. I woke up at 4 and was like wide awake.
You're like one day behind me because I woke up at 4 in Joburg.
Yeah. Which makes me wonder what tomorrow's going to be like.
Oh my God, a disaster.
So how are you getting home? Start there.
I will be going from Sydney to Christchurch tomorrow, the Emirates flight, at the lovely hour of 7:50 a.m.
And you're doing that because you're flying Emirates first.
I am to hitch flying Emirates first.
3 hours, you're going to get a shower on the plane.
Oh, yes.
So you shouldn't shower at the hotel then when you get up in the morning. You should go as rank as possible so you can get...
No, I need to be like, I can't be trashy at the same time. There's nothing says that says I can't take a second shower.
No, that's true.
So I'll get up, take a quick shower. I'll go to the airport. Allegedly, I got an email just a little bit ago saying there's a special check-in area that I have to show up to.
Oh.
But I don't get the chauffeur drive because they don't offer it on the 5th Freedom flights, unfortunately.
Of course.
And I'll go to Christchurch tomorrow. I'll spend the night in Christchurch. And then from Christchurch, I will on Tuesday morning, because I have to remember what days we're in now. So today's Sunday. Tomorrow will be Monday. Tuesday morning at the lovely hour of 6:10 a.m., I take an Air New Zealand flight to Melbourne and then fly United from Melbourne to San Francisco to Toronto to Newark.
You have a very long day ahead of you.
Oh, yeah. And maybe Air Canada FAs will strike. So who knows what Tuesday brings?
So he's going to spend the night in Toronto?
Oh, God, no. I hope not.
Yeah, I mean, you're flying to Christchurch to start, because the fares out of Christchurch were out of New Zealand in general were much better.
Oh, my God. Like
hundreds of dollars?
The PE fare out of Christchurch was was 33% cheaper than the coach fare out of Sydney.
Wow. I mean, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
I am flying Qantas first.
It's exciting.
Sydney to the FW.
It's a fun flight.
So I think it's 16 hours, I think is what we said.
And you're supposed to get into late.
Yeah, they said it's 40 minutes late in our flight. He said that. I don't know. That's what the file flight plan, I guess, says. We'll see. We were talking about switching to the LAX flight. It would get me home like 4 hours sooner. It's tempting, but I have to also be at the airport at like 7 a.m. then for that one.
Yes.
Which for the DFW flight, I don't have to be there till 10.
Yeah, stick to the DFW. It'll be a better experience anyways.
Yeah.
And God knows with yesterday's AA flight didn't leave until today in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's like a risk.
Yeah, so God knows what's going on with AA.
So this is the flight I'm on is the first A380 back to DFW. Up till now, it's been a 787-9. In Qantas.
Interesting.
So that should be fun.
I mean, I like the 380. The lounge area was very nice.
It was nice. Yeah, we used that lounge area, hung out for a little while. I liked it. I had the tail camera, which I thought was really cool.
Oh, yeah, turn that on.
Yeah, I turned it on for the landing. It was kind of a crazy landing coming into Sydney. We come from a direction you said isn't quite normal.
Every time I've come to Sydney, you land to the north. This is the first time I've come in where we've landed to the south. So we came in from the west. Went up the western edge of Sydney. So we saw if you were on the left side, I think, you saw the Harbour Bridge and most of downtown. We did a U-turn, then came back down.
Yeah.
And landed on 16 right.
It was a bumpy, fairly bumpier landing. The weather was not great. Like we said, it's been raining here, so.
You know what was surprising to me? One of the things was the lack of any turbulence from Joburg to Sydney.
It was very little. Never woke me up.
It was crazy. It just, that and then how quickly Qantas turned off the seatbelt sign.
Yeah.
Like, I think we were like 500 feet above ground, maybe 1,000 feet, and they turned it right off.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of like European carriers. Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of the opposite of what I experienced from Frankfurt to Joburg, which was, at Frankfurt to Joburg was constant shock the entire time. This was like no.
Nothing.
Yeah. Anything else about the flights?
No, that you want to talk about? I don't. That's,
yeah.
Otherwise, it was uneventful. Arrival into Sydney was fine.
We were struggling before we got to the Joburg airport. We fell asleep in the car. We met up with a friend, had lunch, and then we all went to the airport together. And I felt bad for our friend because I fell asleep in the back of the car, just like sitting up straight.
Oh, I fell asleep at one point too. You woke me up by asking a question. I don't
think we were making a ton of sense, but I felt much more alive after the Qantas flight.
I think our friend was probably just amused at us.
So yeah, well, we're going to talk about, some stuff about what we collect from flights. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Southwest because there's been some questions that people have raised. And I think it's worth us talking about. So we'll talk about that in the bonus topics for the Patreon subscribers. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.